I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is your official Legbazaar-Marama spoiler warning. If you have not seen the last two episodes of Waco, The Aftermath, and you're intending on watching them, we will probably be spoiling them, but not until about halfway through the episode. So enjoy the first bit, but then when we start talking about Waco, off you pop.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg and a bucket of chicken.
Pretty little cornstarch.
My
werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario.
Hello and welcome to Mission Zach's Legwizama-Rama. It's a podcast where each week my friend Zach and I get together and we chat about John Leguizamo, everything he's been in, why, because we love him and we didn't think about it much when we started. If you're thinking to yourself, wow, that's niche, yes. And if you're thinking to yourself, wow, that must not have much reach, you'd be right. I am one of your co-hosts. I'm Mish Wittrup. Mm-hmm. You might know me from, oh God, I don't know, man. Hey, you might know me from Melbourne International
Good,
Comedy
mate.
Festival. Hey!
And hustle.
Bring hustle, bitch.
Hustle. Every day I tell this girl, every day I say, you got to hustle.
Well, watch me hustle.
No shame in the hustle.
You might remember me from Melbourne International Comedy Festival, my 2024 show, which is currently on at the Butterfly Club, 10 p.m. until the 7th of April. If you're listening to this after the 7th of April, you missed out, silly Billy. I'm joined, as always, by my very talented friend, Zachary Thomas Ruane, who you might know from.
You might know from my Lido screenings. I do screenings at the Lido once a month, second Friday of every month in Hawthorne. I screen fun films. You also might know me from Auntie Donna's Coffee Cafe. Watch now on ABC iView.
Dream job, by the way, the Lido job.
Yes.
Such a good job.
Yes.
Like, how much, such fun. I was, because, like, the way I look at it is there's so many movies that I would love to watch again that I just, you can't find anywhere, like, from my past.
But chances are if you can't find it, then they can't legally screen it. That's one thing I would say.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm often surprised by the limitations of like, distributors and stuff. So I probably, for every three things I screen, there's one that doesn't get through. Like, I really wanted to do Moonraker, do you know this one? It's the James Bond where they go into outer space.
I have not seen this. What, is that a thing?
Absolutely. There is a James Bond from the 70s because Star Wars was doing good, where they go to outer space and there's a character called Jaws who's 8 foot tall and he has like big shiny teeth and he was in another one and they fight Jaws in space.
Which Bond is it?
It's Roger Moore. Of course it's Roger Moore. That I can't get because they're protective of Bond films. So initially I wanted to screen it when the big serious sad Bond was coming to an end and he was coming out. And then I had another go down the line. I thought, well, there's no Bonds coming out for like 3 years.
Yeah.
But no, they're just like, no, we don't let you screen silly Bond screenings. Other things, like I can't do Face Off because
why?
It's just like a technical reason. Like there's just a technical reason at Disney.
You can access Face Off on one of the streaming.
You can watch Face Off. It's very specifically like they don't have the file type to project. Like it's shit like that.
Can they play Disney movies?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like it's just, you know, I didn't think I'd be allowed to do Cats. I was allowed to do Cats because they're ready. They're like, we'll make any money from this that we can. But, like, it's very interesting. Like, I really want to do a movie. There's a movie called, it's the guy who did Donnie Darko. It was his second film. I'm having this total mental blank now. What's it called? I love this movie. The Rock's in it. Have you heard of this film?
No, what is it?
Oh, I'm having a total mental blank.
While you're looking...
Southland Tales.
Okay.
Sorry. Southland Tales. You would half love it.
Oh.
You would half hate it.
Ah.
And that's why it didn't do very well. So it's this movie that after Donnie Darko did well, the director of Donnie Darko like had this script that he was already developing, and then people were like, all right, we'll give you money because Donnie Darko was such a sleeper hit. And then he was like, but now it was just about like crime happening in like Southern California with like various celebrities. It was like a parody on celebrity culture. But then he was like, oh, but with Donnie Darko, I'm really interested in this stuff now. So he made it like set a bit in the future. And then he also added heaps of Lynch stuff. And
great.
It was this sprawling weird thing. And then they got into Cannes. And then, but they weren't ready, so they showed a rough cut at Cannes, and it got so viciously booed, like it was so viciously torn to shreds.
Amazing.
That they then lost all their like money to do post production, and they kind of never finished it. I can't show it. So the movie is a flawed film. It has about an hour of genius in it, an hour of some just wrong choices, like bad choices. But I can't screen it because it never got a theatrical release in Australia. So there's no theatrical version. There's just these weird little interesting things that I can't screen.
I've officially seen. Well, there's two things I want to talk about off the back of that.
Then I'll tell you some more about Southland Tales.
You can tell me which story you want to hear first. There's a movie that I want you to screen so badly because I haven't seen it in forever. It's called My Stepmother's an Alien.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about that.
Gina Davis.
No, that's Earth Girls Are Easy.
Right.
That you really should screen. Earth Girls Are Easy. I've talked about 10 out of 10 films. I've got a big handful of 10 out of 10 films for me.
Both of those films sci-fi's, Mish?
Yeah. yes. Yes, yeah.
I don't think I know anyone that loves sci-fi more than you.
I hate sci-fi, man.
You just don't like The Matrix.
There is a breed of sci-fi films that I hate.
Yeah.
Hold on. You're thinking of Earth Girls Are Easy, which is Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
Jim Carrey's first movie. It's got Damon Wayans in it as well. That's such a good film.
I've not seen it.
You simply must put it on. But I have seen that. I accessed it. My Stepmother's an Alien, which I believe I mentioned last week or a week before or something. I've mentioned it previously. Is so good. And I have not seen it since I was 10. It's Kim Basinger. Is that her surname? Kim Basinger?
I don't know.
Yeah. And Dan Aykroyd. It's Alison Hannigan and Seth Green when they were kids.
Yep.
And it's got John Lovitz in it. And essentially Dan Aykroyd is a single father and Kim Basinger is an alien that comes down to like use some sort of technology that he's created, but then they get married and like it's so cooked and I have to watch it. And I can't imagine the only platform I seem to be able to watch it on is through your Lido screening. So just do me a favor and put it on. I'm telling you it'll do well.
We'll put it on.
The second thing I'd love to chat about is I have officially now seen the worst movie in the world. The worst film ever made.
Yeah.
And I know that we've come out this podcast. One of the things doing this podcast has taught me is to not just go things are bad and things are good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, and something that I might not like because of personal choice doesn't make it a bad film.
There are some that are.
Yeah, some that are just really bad. But some like that I don't like. Doesn't make them bad. It's just me personally.
Yeah, yeah.
No. There is a movie that is so bad. Shout out to Greg Larson because he got me onto this.
Yeah, yeah.
It is just bad. And when he was telling me about this particular film, I was thinking, oh, this sounds amazing. Much like in Tommy Wiseau's
The Room.
It's oh, this sounds amazingly bad. And no, it's just awful. It's called The Fanatic. Have we talked about this?
Oh, no. Is this the one with... It's John Travolta.
John Travolta.
Yeah, yeah.
Directed and written by Fred Durst. And when Greg told me that, I was like, oh, I have to... That's going to be my new favorite film. He's like, no, it's really bad. And I'm like, yeah, great. I love bad, like, quote unquote, bad films, right? And I got this movie. I think I paid for it. I might have paid for it because I was like, I have to watch it. Fred Durst and John Travolta. And I looked it up. And It made $3,000 at the box office.
I love those.
$3,000. And it's John Travolta and Fred Durst. I'm like, what the fuck? Do people not know about this film? And I watched it, and it is so bad. It is a really bad film.
But is it just, like, bad?
Oh, it's just not enjoyable. It's
yeah, this is the thing. This is my defense of So Bad. Or, like, this is my takedown of So Bad It's Good. It's not that I disagree that bad movies and, you know, that we can't laugh at bad movies. Da, 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 da. It's that if a movie just get worse. It's so bad, like, it's just like a bad movie. Oh. I'll often be watching movies like that and I'll be like,
well,
again, 10 minutes in, I'm like, what the fuck?
Quote unquote, so bad it's good movies. To me, they're good movies. I've always said that, like, I just want to be entertained. I've never really cared about the history of a film, the genre, why it was made like that, blah, blah, blah. I just need to be entertained by what I'm watching. So something like, we'll just go to The Room because Tommy Wiseau's Room is just so iconically so bad it's good or whatever. No, that's a good film. It's really entertaining. I could watch it right now. I love that film.
Yeah.
Right? Cats is bad, but The Fanatic is just a bad movie. And it's like, of course it only made $3,000, but it's not like, oh my God, you have to go and watch it. Don't watch it. I know it sounds...
Now I want to watch it.
Yeah, I know. I know it sounds great. It sounds like it would be so good. Like a Fred Durst film. He made a movie and he cast John Travolta, and John Travolta plays an autistic fan of a movie actor, an action film guy, and he's just a fanatic. He's obsessed with this guy who's also a bit of a prick, and it's just so awful. It was one of those situations where I got to the end of the movie and I wanted them all to die. Like, I just killed them. But the only thing that would have redeemed that movie is if they all died, and they don't all die. Fun fact. But it was just horrible. And I just didn't know it even existed. I did not know this film existed.
I've seen footage of it. I remember when it came out and just nothing. And the photos are like, I was intrigued. Like when I saw the photo of John Travolta, like, because he has like a blonde wig. It's a real transformation.
It's shocking, man.
But from the photo, I was like, oh, this looks interesting. Mm.
The John Travolta thing is interesting though, because like, I'm sorry, I watched Grease recently.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's a good musical. The opening song. Yeah. No. 100%. The opening song of Grease, we take the pressure and we grow. It's so good. That song is fucking mint. That musical is great. John Travolta in that musical is great.
He's a star.
And then you watch, like, Look Who's Talking, and you're just like, oh, my God. You're a star. And then Pulp Fiction comes out and you're like, fuck yeah, get shorty. Oh my God. And then what happened?
When you look at his career, he's done more of the fanatic. He's done more of The Fanatic than he's done.
But that's the thing. And it's just like, we just like, and then he gets up on stage and says Adele Dazeem. And you're just like, what is going on? It's like, to me, that is just like a fascinating, like, I mean, I don't know anything about him. I've never really studied the dude, but like, what a fascinating turn of events.
Yeah, no, he's had like, cause he was on the top of the world with Grease and with Saturday Night Fever.
Yep.
And he's great in both of those films.
Oh.
And then, but then, you know, there's
Welcome Back Cotter. He was on that television show.
But then he went into the wilderness and like, and then Quentin Tarantino's love of, you know, bringing back actors. And Tarantino was like, I want John Travolta in this part when no one else would have cast him at that point. He wasn't cool anymore. And that made him cool again. He got a run of a few more films and then he just went back to this. He's had a really weird career.
A bizarre career. And that's not any kind of commentary on his personal life. I know the dude's taken...
Oh, no. From what I've heard about him.
No, but he's taken some big personal blows for sure. I get that. But, like, his career is one of the most bizarre trajectories I've ever seen.
Have you heard... You know that there was a sequel to Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
Called Staying Alive.
Yes.
Have you heard of it? Tom's here, by the way. Hi, Tom.
No, I haven't.
He like enters a dance competition. Yeah. It's like a completely different movie. It's like all 80s.
It's very
bizarre.
It gets
oiled up and leaps around.
But have you ever seen the Look Who's Talking movies?
Years, like when I was 5.
The first Look Who's Talking is iconic.
Is it good though?
Yeah, when was the last time you watched it? Not long ago, a few years. But yeah, But like that's Kirstie Alley and John Travolta, and they're phenomenal in it.
It's not a movie I would say I have an opinion on unless I rewatched it.
Well, I'm a big Olympia Dukakis fan.
Which one's Olympia Dukakis?
She plays the mum. She's also the mum in Moonstruck, obviously.
Yeah, and what else is she in?
Olympia Dukakis is...
Let's talk through her for a second. Then I want to tell you the cast of Southland Tales.
All right, cool.
Olympia Dukakis.
Yeah.
What's she been in?
Well, I will always forever know Olympia Dukakis as Cher's mother in Moonstruck.
Oh, yes.
Like, come on now.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah,
She's so great. She's in Look Who's Talking.
That was what I
Steel Magnolias.
Yeah.
She's in that too. Actually, that's kind of the three movies I've seen with her in it, and she fucking slays. That bitch, amazing.
We should watch all of her movies then.
Oh, my God. I would absolutely be up for that.
No, you wouldn't.
We should do a podcast.
You want nothing. Do you want to hear the cast of Southland Tales?
Yeah, sure, more than anything.
All right. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
What?
Sean William Scott. Sarah Michelle Gellar. Justin Timberlake, Kevin Smith, Amy Poehler, Mandy Moore.
What the fuck is
John
this?
John Lovitz, Wallace Shawn. Who else?
Oh my God, what is
Beth
this?
Beth Grant.
Of course. Well, yeah, of course, man. Kevin Smith?
It is like the wildest cast ever. It's the most interesting performance The Rock has ever done.
Oh,
he plays
God,
this
bizarre.
Like it's really a cool performance from The Rock. It's when he was still kind of trying to prove himself as a movie star.
Yeah.
It's so whack. There's a scene in it where Justin Timberlake mimes to Killer's song that now you watch it and you go, oh, that's interesting. But then you go, wait a second, that song came out like a year before this film came out.
Where can I see this film?
I think it's pretty easy to stream, or maybe you can download it. It's one I've always wanted to do a screening for it because I want to watch it on the big screen, and it has to be, I think it has to be given the context. You have to give the context of it was booed into oblivion at Cannes and they never finished the edit because it's not like someone, like I had someone ask me recently online, they were like, is this, do you think it's a bad film or a good film? And I was like, it's neither. It's a rough cut of something that could have gone either way. There are choices in it that are bad.
Yeah.
Like bad choices.
Yeah.
Like there are parts of it that are not good and then there are parts of it that are inspired and it's such an interesting film. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
All right. I'll watch it. I will watch it.
Southland Tales.
I'll also say just very quickly, we're just all over the place here.
Yeah, whatever. Who gives a shit?
I don't give a fuck.
Welcome to Mission Zach, motherfuckers.
In talking about Olympia Dukakis, I just had a look. I'm like, why do I only know three things she's in? She's also in a little movie called The Infiltrator, which is on our list to watch.
Oh, there you go.
John Leguizamo
in
it.
Well, you can have a real Olympia Dukakis
moment. Well, I mean, right now we're currently having a Gia Daddy Ribisi moment. Like,
yeah, I'm really loving that. I was telling Max Miller, who directs all of Auntie Donna's stuff.
My God, I thought you were about to say who's directed Giovanni Ribisi. I was like, what?
It wouldn't surprise me if he just like, oh, yeah, directed him in like a car commercial once. That's the real Max way.
Yeah.
If for anyone who knows Max Miller, which is none of you, I've got to stop with the in-jokes. What is this fucking podcast? But I just ran into him in the office before and I was telling him about Waco the Aftermath, which we'll get to. And I was like telling him the cast and he was just like, oh, that's great. I was like Michael Shannon. He's like, oh, that's great. And I was like, Giovanni Ribisi. He's like, yeah, he's great. Not as good of a story as I thought it was. Hey, I got one more question in the all over the place, in the spirit of all over the place. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Love Lies Bleeding yet?
No, you asked me about this yesterday on the phone. Zach and I had a personal conversation on the phone and he said, have you seen it? I said, not yet, but I think I might see it this weekend.
It's a great, I recommend it to the listeners. I had a fun idea for a new segment we could do, which is what's something good you've watched this week?
That's a fun segment.
What if
we haven't watched anything good, though?
Well, what's something you've watched this week?
All right, yeah. Do you want to start it now?
Yeah.
All right, what's something we watched this
week?
Wait,
we'll get it clean for the visual. No, we won't. We'll do that next week.
Yeah, okay.
Mish, can I say? No, I won't.
You know what? Put the video up. Put it up. They'll know why I didn't want it up. Put it up. This is why. The visual, this is why. I came in.
You look great, man.
We've never filmed before. We've never filmed. I've had the day from hell. I've spent so much of today on a tram. I look like someone who has spent a lot of her time on a tram. And then Tom's like, let's just film it for fun. I'm like, not today. I look like shit.
Okay, great.
And then what? Now all of a sudden you've decided to just throw a really awesome segment at us? Put it up.
And a great segment.
Here she is.
That'd be a great little clip. You know, you get the vertical. Hey, Mish, what have you watched this week? You answer, I answer. There's a great little clip. That's a really cool story that you've just told. You have changed the timeline a little bit.
A lot. A lot.
Everything about the story that Mish just told is 100% true, except when she said, much like Waco the Aftermath,
oh, God.
Except when Tom said, hey, why don't we try filming? The way Mish said it sounded like it happened today and not last week.
I forgot. I forgot. If I'd known, I would have looked hot.
I look like shit as well. Let's
next week, I'm going to look so good. I'm going to go all the fuck out,
I just
man.
Love you telling a true story just a little out of order. You're just jumping around like Pulp Fiction.
All right, so, well, let's do a... something nice...
What did you watch this? What's something you watched this week?
What's the segment called? It has to have a fun...
Oh, well, we can figure it out for next week once there's a visual component.
All right, cool. I have an answer.
Yeah, great.
If I'd known we were doing this segment, I wouldn't be putting myself in a position where I'm going to be very embarrassed. I've had a very busy week. I haven't had much time to watch anything because I've been comedy festivals coming up. I've been doing a lot of prep for that. I've been doing some jobs. Yeah. So the only thing I've watched this week other than Waco the Aftermath is X on the Beach Celebrity Edition. So I'm glad we changed the title from what's something nice you've watched this week.
Good.
I've watched X on the Beach, which is a British reality television show where they take a bunch of British reality TV personalities and put them on a beach, and then every episode one of their exes comes in and they have fights with them.
That's so funny.
So the season I'm watching at the moment has Joey Essex in it, and Joey Essex is from The Only Way is Essex, but it's a British television personality. And he's fallen in love with Lorena.
So I watched...
Who's a Playboy model.
I watched Blue Velvet. That was...
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Do you know I've never seen Blue Velvet?
It's
except for that one scene, that horrific scene with...
Isabella Rossellini?
Yeah, guy who's always the bad guy.
Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper. And Isabel Rossellini.
Oh, yeah. There's a few horrific scenes.
So. Well, I've only ever seen that one scene. I was like, oh, my God. Incredible. But, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's very funny.
And I'm like, one day I will watch this movie, but I need to be prepped. And if my headspace is X on the Beach Celebrity Edition, then you'd probably guess that I'm not really up for watching Blue Velvet at the moment.
Do you know, that is the most upsetting scene in the film. But there are a few. It's a good film. It's his best performance. It's incredible. Like, it's so...
Dennis Hopper's best performance?
Dennis Hopper.
Have you seen Waterworld?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yeah, no.
It must be pretty good.
No, that's absolutely fair. No, I think he did Waterworld. Like, I think the reason he was a villain all through the 90s and 2000s is because of Blue Velvet. I'd need to, like, check it. But I think that Blue Velvet was his, like, he's so good as a villain in it. And it's so well written because it's so unhinged. It's like Lynchian, like completely removed from reality. But it's this kind of, you know how villains in movies usually are quite like pointed or evil or dark? He's just like fucked. Like he just talks about, like, there's one point where like they're doing a toast. He's like, what are we going to toast to? And he's like, I know, let's toast to fucking. And it's just and it's just like, what the fuck, man? Like, that's the whole movie. You watch the whole movie with him, just, and he's evil and he does horrible, horrible things in this film. You know, it's not a film for everyone. But then the way he talks, he just says the most fucked up shit that's just like, it's so much more evil. And when you think about it, the most fucked people are the ones that just say weird shit. You're just like, what the fuck are you talking about, cunt? And that's my review of it. I also watched BMX Bandits.
Yeah, I was so jealous that you watched that.
I've never seen it before.
Me, I've never seen it either.
It is incredible. It is so good. The visuals are really, like, on a, like, it's visually really, really strong. It's like a beautiful movie. I think Ozploitation films are underrated for their visuals, right? And it's really kind of cool and there's great actors. But also they couldn't get a 16-year-old girl or someone with the body of a 16-year-old girl to be Nicole Kidman's stunt double, so they just got a man. And, it just, and I read that fact and I knew that fact and then I watched the film and I was like, surely it's not going to be that obvious.
Is it really obvious?
It is so, that's so obvious. Funny. And it's funny because it's like Nicole Kidman, it's like a teen movie. Mm. So like, she's too young, so it's like not like I find her attractive, but like that's the context. The other boy characters find her attractive. It's like she's doing all these cool tricks. It's for teenage boys to be like, oh, wow, and she can ride a bike, but it's a man doing the tricks, and it's so funny.
That's brilliant.
It's a really solid film, and for that 2 minutes of footage, it's great anyway, but that 2 minutes of footage is real fun.
I love that. That's excellent. Hey, when we come back from the ad break, we're going to say what our favorite Nicole Kidman film is. I'm sure we've done that.
But let's do it again.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back. I hope you got an ad. Let's get Tom paid. All right, so we before the ad break, I said what let's talk about our favorite Nicole Kidman film. Let's like say what our favorite Nicole Kidman film is. That's really, really tricky because, and I think I've actually mentioned this on the fucking podcast, but I used to not like Nicole Kidman. I thought that she was uptight and horrible, and then realized in watching Big Little Lies that no, I think she's just a phenomenal actress that has convinced me that she's uptight and horrible because she's played so many uptight, horrible people and she does it so well. I think Nicole Kidman is a phenomenal actor, like phenomenal actor.
I agree. I mean, we have discussed this on the podcast before.
Yeah,
but
we definitely have.
Nicole Kidman is really, really good at playing uptight people.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Okay, I think
I'm quickly scrolling through her films.
It's hard to say, but I think my favorite might be Moulin Rouge as a movie. I love that movie so much, but I do think that her best performance was The Others.
The Others?
Yeah, I think she's so good in that.
I'm going to say The Hours.
I haven't seen The Hours.
I haven't seen The Hours in a very long time, but if you want to see uptight Nicole Kidman, oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, is she uptight in that film.
And also for nostalgia purposes, I do love me some Practical Magic.
You seen To Die For?
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah. Have you seen Eyes Wide Shut?
Do you know I haven't?
You got... I think what we've discussed this.
Of course we have.
You simply must see that.
That is the podcast way.
Yeah.
Everyone has discussed everything.
But I will say Big Little Lies, it's not a film, but I loved Big Little Lies. That really changed things for me, in my opinion, and Nicole Kidman.
Do you know what I think?
She's wonderful. And Nicole, if you're listening, I'm really sorry for not appreciating how phenomenal you are.
Do you know what I found? Do you know what's funny? My Big Little Lies journey was I had that realization about Nicole Kidman before you because I'm better than you. No, I just had it. I can't remember when. I think because I loved The Hours so much, I've always kind of been in her corner.
Yeah.
But I've always felt that about her. So I went into Big Little Lies being like, oh, da 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 da. Mm. And then I had the exact same realization with Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
I was just like and it was funny because I went into Big Little Lies as like a, it's so funny how people just make it. And then I was like, oh, fuck, I've done this with Reese Witherspoon. Mm. It's not that I never didn't like her. I just never thought about her that much as an actor. And then her in that, she's just so good. Mm. And she does one thing really, really well.
Yeah.
And it was just a very funny thing where I was like, oh, I've done this with another actor. She's great. Reese Witherspoon's really good.
Yeah, she is. She's good.
She's good in Election.
I love Election. She's really good. I rewatched that movie last year sometime. And I love that film.
And it's a film.
Have you seen it, Tom?
No.
It's great. Mm. It's a film that, like, I think because the characters are empathetically written, it ages well. Like, that's a film that could have aged really badly, considering some of the themes, but it doesn't, because I think she just becomes a more empathetic character than the way people viewed her 20 years ago. And it's fucked that people never saw, like, people used to not see her as an empathetic character, which is fucked up, because I feel so sad for her character.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Very good film.
Very good movie.
All right.
Let's talk about Waco, The Aftermath.
Talking about Waco, The Aftermath. This week, we watched the last two episodes of Waco, The Aftermath, a series that we committed to watching in its entirety before realizing that John Leguizamo was only in one scene in the first episode. In this episode, General Zod from Superman continues to investigate neo-Nazis with the help of an Australian supermodel and the character who actually did the investigation in real life. Meanwhile, Gia Daddy Ribisi continues to defend the surviving members of the cult from the evil government in court. That's not to say he thinks their hands are clean. There is a particularly powerful scene at the end of the second last episode in which he confronts them about their own guilt and responsibility as members of a cult. A scene I loved but probably won't talk about on our funny little podcast about our fave actor. John Leguizamo plays the part of Jacob Vasquez, a character that does not in any way feature in either of these two episodes, except for in the opening titles.
I feel less bad about doing this because he is in the opening titles. That's how I've convinced myself that this is okay.
Yes. Yeah, he's in the opening title. Yeah. Also, I was sucked in and I wanted to watch it and... what a waste of my time and energy to watch the rest of Waco and not talk about it.
And hey, straight off the bat of what you just said then, how I was really looking forward to watching it, it did not disappoint.
Hey, good for you.
How do you feel about that?
You know, good for you. I'm glad you felt that way.
Oh, did you feel a bit empty?
I thought each story wrapped up pretty well, but I do think that there was an element with the... No, it worked pretty well.
Well, this is what I found interesting about it as an Australian viewer of it, right? Mm. I'd heard about Waco before we watched Waco, but I didn't know anything about The Aftermath, right? I didn't know anything about what came from that at all. But I'm guessing based on American history, a lot of people did know about. So like back in episode one, when it's like, who's this skinny guy named Tim and why is he talking to this other skinny guy about bringing down the government? And then they never really showed them. And I was like, oh, I reckon they're probably those neo-Nazis and who knows what's going to happen with them. And it turns out, obviously, people would know this about the aftermath of Waco, is that Tim and his mate were the guys that did the bombing.
Oklahoma City bombing.
The Oklahoma City bombing. In response to what happened with the government and Waco. Like he came out and said, I did this because they infuriated me so badly about what happened with Waco. And I didn't know that. So that was a big fucking... I'd heard of the Oklahoma City bombing.
No, I was the same. I didn't know it was so linked. I didn't know it was so linked to Waco. I do stand by the fact that the script made it very linked to Waco. Like, they kept talking about Waco. And there is a part of me that thinks I wish they'd done it a little more wishy-washy and a bit more like...
Mm. I still agree that I wish... that they had just focused on the five people that were on trial.
Yes.
And that each episode was, I think you said that a few episodes ago, that each episode focused on one of them and how they got there and how they got into the Branch Davidians, blah, blah, blah. If anything, the part I didn't need in the end was all the flashback stuff about, actual Vernon and where he came from and how he got there, because I felt like that was really lacking. Either make that the series, because I felt like that was missing a lot of stuff.
What I feel like is that the Michael Shannon investigating the neo-Nazis Were the neo-Nazis linked to Oklahoma City bombing, or was that a separate thing?
Separate thing.
So I think Michael Shannon, who I love as an actor, but Michael Shannon investigating a crime that he didn't investigate. So I then went and looked it up in real life. So you know the woman he's working with throughout the series, who I thought, the way I read it, I was, my guess is she represents the other amazing, you know, the, I was expecting her to be a fictionalized character. I looked it up. She was the one that did the investigation. He had nothing to do with it because he's a negotiator.
Yes.
And they don't investigate crimes.
Yes.
What in the CSI is going on?
100% yes.
So I kind of wish they'd had the kaputs to just go, nah, Michael Shannon's only in this a little bit. You know, I know you, we all love Michael Shannon, but this is Giovanni Ribisi's story now, and that they'd kind of done a handball there. I think they, I love the actors in it. I loved it all, but it's like, I just think they could have completely done away with the neo-Nazi
plot. I agree with you. I thought it was interesting, but like, I'd rather they had scrapped that and focused more on other stuff.
And then, and I think they could have then, just, I'm getting a bit like Dr. Zach here, but I think they then, if they had done that, I think the flashbacks could have been better. They would have had more time on the flashbacks. They would have had more time on the court case.
Yep.
And it just felt like everything felt a tiny little bit rushed.
Yep.
And I think
no,
if they just made
fair.
A bit of room, the court case would have been, had more room for that. To be a little bit more, and I just think that, but you know,
I think the entertainment for
what
me.
What do I know? I'm just a girl,
not yet a woman. I think the part that I enjoyed about it was that I didn't see it coming. Like I didn't know, I didn't know the results, and like how horrific it would have been. Because so basically, the jury found them not guilty, except they did find them guilty of shooting a certain type of firearm. But one of the things they weren't found guilty of is the crime. So the judge was like, oh, actually, yeah, no, you're right. That doesn't make sense that you'd be guilty of shooting the firearm in the crime, but not the crime. So, nah, you're not guilty. And then they're free. And then they take her back in again because he turns around and goes, actually, I think that you're all guilty. That judge character, what a little cunt, makes you just so burned up inside. So I didn't see any of it coming. So all of it was a nice little surprise for me. The thing I loved the most about it was in episode 5, the scene where Michael Shannon's on the stand.
Yeah.
And Giovanni Ribisi is questioning him. And it was just like, oh, if we were at acting school, the amount of boys that would have been like, I want to do that scene for a film scene. Do you know what I mean? Like, for a scene. It was just such a wonderful, like, such a wonderful piece of acting between the two of them.
This is too good.
Giordani Ribisi, get that Scientologist an Emmy. He's so good in this.
Yeah, he's so good.
He is so good in this. It's like easily the best thing I've ever seen him do. And I like him. Like, I think he's a good actor.
I think it's like, I just think, yeah, it would have been good to give him a little bit more space.
Mm.
I would have loved to have gotten to know his character. I
put
just,
him on the fucking the cover. The cover's Michael Shannon with the American
flag.
Because
I love Michael Shannon.
But I would argue, like they put Michael Shannon, the cover of Wake of the Aftermath is Michael Shannon on the foreground of an American flag. I would argue Michael Shannon and Giovanni Ribisi are equally billable. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like, put Giovanni Ribisi in that thing, and I don't think that it's going to make much. Why didn't they do that?
Well, I think probably like just in Hollywood land, Michael Shannon has had more success more recently. So,
do you think so?
Yeah. And he was in the first Waker. Yeah, he's in Superman. He was in.
Oh, I don't watch that shit, so that's why I don't know.
Yeah, but a lot of people do.
Okay, but I don't watch that shit.
Mish, we're not normal people. I do think.
Do you think Michael Shannon's more famous than Giovanni Ribisi?
Yeah, I was just looking at IMDb because of what you're talking about, and I know who Michael Shannon
Tom's
is.
Tom's our normal person. Yeah.
I do not know who any of the other actors in the entire show are.
Okay, well.
But I know Michael Shannon because of Superman.
Okay.
Which was, you know, one of those DC films everyone saw.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kian Johnson and Abby Lee. No,
I don't. I mean, I know Abby Lee a little bit through, from modeling, but only once I looked her up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, I believe she did the Maya 09. Yeah. I don't know. I think Michael Shannon is a bit more famous, but it's ironic because part of why I think why he's more famous is in the mix is because of Waco.
Yeah.
So it's like I think sometimes you just got to back people. This is the creative talking over executives. Mm. I think that in terms of actors holding a series, Giovanni Ribisi could have held it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something really interesting about going, season one is about the negotiator.
Yep.
Season two is about the lawyer. And you like Michael Shannon and he's going to be in it a bit.
Yeah.
And they could have given him a more subtle through line, like just from time to time he's in it so that once you have that final confrontation.
Or just revealing him on the stand.
How cool would that be?
Oh, I just came.
You watched.
That would have been, can you imagine what would have happened to us if the reveal was just him in episode 5 stepping onto the stand?
How cool is that?
Oh, that's good.
Five episodes in, the character from the last season is there for the biggest confrontation.
It's a reverse Johnny Legs reveal. It's like we get given Johnny Legs in the first 20 minutes of the fucking series and then never see it.
That's so cool. That's cool. That's what I wanted. And I just think, yeah, Giovanni Ribisi is such a cool actor, and there's so much to that character I didn't learn, and then I looked up the real story afterwards, and I just, there were certain, like, there were just, you could just feel certain, I think a true story, I don't think drama needs to be that loyal to the true story. I think that's on people for not fucking realizing how acting and writing works.
No,
right?
I agree.
But I do think there were certain things that, in order to make this a season two, there were certain truths they had to kind of push that just started to lose the
integrity.
Just a little bit of started to lose what this story's trying to say. So, like, Michael Shannon, God, I'm going a bit hard on this series. I quite liked it.
No, that's okay. No, this is good.
Michael Shannon, the character he plays, was he got kicked off I might be wrong here, but he got kicked off the negotiations earlier than it is depicted in season one, right? After 25 days instead of 40 or something, I think. But I think that's okay. That's like, okay, for the sake of drama, let's keep him around for another 10 days. Let's just have him getting kicked off a little bit closer. That's for me, is an okay change. To have him investigating the Oklahoma City bombings before it happened alongside this character I don't even know the name of, who is the real person who investigated it, just starts to get a little bit like, and also it's like, if there's like these accusations at the end of the series of like, this like has him knowing that things are going to happen and they ignore him, and it's like, like, did he know? Like, I don't know. It's just a little bit more in the realm of, and even just, I don't know, I think as well, God, I'm going to town here.
Yeah, go for it.
I also think we've been exposed, something that's interesting here is there's a lot of court case in this, and there's a lot of like what drama does around court cases, you know. And I was thinking about it, and it's like I've been exposed to how courts look a lot more in the last few years than I used to be.
Because people keep suing you?
Yeah.
No, because you have all those like what are they called? The stay away from me orders. Don't come near me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
Are you accusing me of being a stalker now? Oh, it's a good bit, Mish. Mish, now people are going to think I'm a stalker.
Well, you just said,
to be careful about what you say.
You said I've been exposed to courtrooms a lot in the last few years.
On TikTok.
If I hadn't made a joke, people would have assumed that you're doing criminal stuff.
Yeah, no.
What do you mean on TikTok?
Like Johnny Depp.
I'm exposed to sourdough bread on TikTok.
Like Johnny Depp, like Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, how good was the Gwyneth Paltrow one?
Well, someone was exposed to court cases too. I just think that we know what the courts look like a little bit more, and we know that they're a little bit slower, and we know that things take days, and like, and over a 5-episode arc, I think I'm okay with things being a little bit like slower, whereas because they were trying to jam in so much, things happen so quickly. And that was my thing, was like, I'm so drawn to these characters, and I'm so drawn to the idea that, you know, how responsible are they? The 5th episode has some really powerful stuff. I'm like, how responsible are they? You know, they were brainwashed by this guy, but they also did the things.
Yeah,
you know, and that's really complex and interesting. And that's what I want to see. And they kind of like end it a third of the way in the second last episode and then go off and talk about neo-Nazis. All very interesting, but then that's not fleshed out enough. Mm. And I just think, I just wish, and I don't think it was the creatives. My gut feeling is it was the executives. I just wish that had the kaputs to be like, nah, it's Giovanni Ribisi now. It's a court case. And
no,
that's
I
what
hear
we're
that.
Telling.
I will say that like at the end when everyone got their convictions? That's the right word.
Mm.
Like one of the guys got 40 years and everyone's like, what? And it's like I'm not invested enough in that guy to be so blown away that he got 40 years. We got his story, but it would have been nice if there was like
to really know
what – why he shouldn't have gotten that.
Mm. That's know? What, and that was the story. Like, that was the thing that was hooking me.
I think the thing I liked the most about this series was the cast. Like, the acting. I thought the acting in this series was really good. That scene where Giordani Ribisi is kind of cluing up the five convicted and going, this is the line of questioning you're going to get. And it just becomes very clear. Oh, my God, the transition between, like, I'm acting like I'm the lawyer who's like,
yeah. You know. So for context, this is the scene I said I wouldn't talk about, but it's such a good scene.
Why don't you want to talk about it?
No, I was like, because it's so interesting and complex and
so good.
But basically, for context, a lot of the members of the cult, I can just tell it to you now, Tom. This is great.
It's nice
having
to have someone
to look
who
doesn't. But there are the members of the cult that are on trial for this thing. They want to take the stand. They want to, like, speak their piece. They want to talk about, you know, what the cult was, and they want to speak of David Koresh, and they're like, it's our right. And then they basically make a stand. They go, we're not going to go out there unless you let us talk on the stand. And then Giovanni Ribisi, like, confronts them and says, the reason we're not letting you take the stand is because it's going to be hard. And then he pretends to be.
Yeah, he's like, these are the kind of questions
the prosecution. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we can take it. That's fine. We stand with what we did and what happened. And he's like, cool. So these are some of the questions that they're going to ask you. And he goes from acting like the prosecutor.
The defense.
He goes from acting like it to it becoming very clear that he.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. He acting like the prosecutor.
And then as he's doing this line of questioning, like, but why did you do it? Why was it like that? It's this real, it's so beautiful. The subtlety in the change between acting to very clearly Giordani Ribisi has these opinions about them. Are basically like you stood at the wedding of him and a 10-year-old. Mm. And supported that. And they're like, but it wasn't sexual. No, it was just purely to breed. And he's like, with a 10-year-old? Like, a 10-year-old can't. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's absolutely insane. Mm. And just, like, the subtlety between, like, I believe what the government did was wrong, but you were not an innocent party in this.
It's like...
That is a different court case. And if the court case was, did you aid in the psychoticness of this... Koresh guy, the answer is yes, and you would be guilty and you would go away for that, but that's not what we're fighting for here. It was so good.
I love no one's innocent. And I mean, I think it's so interesting because, like, with cult members, it's so complex, you know, who knows? And I just thought that scene was so cool because it's also a great testament to, like, not making a judgment on a thing until you've seen the whole thing. Yeah. Like, that's something I talk about a lot, but it's like, with this series, about four episodes in, I was like, oh, they're being a little kind to everyone here. Like, they full, like, you know, he's full. He was a fucking creep, right? And I was like, they're not really addressing that. And then they addressed it so well.
So well. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, and he was so good at acting. Mm. Hey, I got one other thing.
Is this your final thought?
Well, it's more of a... Yeah, it's probably final thoughts time, but it's more of an open conversation. Oops and daisies, we're in podcast town. Everyone wants to go home, but Zachy has an open question.
No, go for it.
One thing I liked about it, after I just, like, ripped it to shreds, because I did quite enjoy it.
Well, no, because I think that's the thing that I liked. You just said. I liked this series. But there are some serious things in it that stopped me from loving it, and I should have loved it.
That's what
the problem is. It's like, this was a good series, but fuck, man, it's so clear the things they could have done to make this a fucking amazing series like the original one was.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, I just thought about, like, whack season twos or whack second films.
I love whack season two moments.
There was something about it that I was like, part of what I love about this season two is there are aspects of it that probably they would have cut, like if someone had said you need to cut this down to two stories, they probably would have cut the stuff I loved, maybe, or maybe they would have been smart and made it about the trial.
Mm.
But there's something about a season two where it just doesn't work. There shouldn't be a season two. We've told the self-contained story. Mm. That sometimes that then in its flawed whackness, it opens up like an opportunity for really interesting storytelling that you wouldn't normally get in a mainstream thing.
Yep.
And this made me think of it, but also I thought of did you ever watch Cheer? Did you watch the Cheer documentary?
Cheers with Ted Danson.
Cheers.
Yeah, I've seen Cheers. I've seen Cheers.
No, Cheer, the documentary series.
No.
So Cheer.
Oh, wait, yes, of course I have. Yes, the cheerleading.
The cheerleading one.
Absolutely.
Everyone watched Cheer,
that's a perfect example of a season one to season two. Yeah.
It because of, like, there was a couple of things that happened. I'm not talking about the really dark shit that happened in the middle.
Mm.
What fascinated me about season two was, and I was really thinking this, is like, season one of Cheer was the biggest show on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So how does season two happen? Because it's like it's a documentary. How does season two happen? Because now everyone in season one is really, really famous.
Mm.
And now everyone in season one has just been on the biggest Netflix documentary of the last 3 years.
Mm.
So season two, by virtue of existing and by virtue of not really making sense, becomes this interesting story about people thrown into fame. It becomes this story about what happens when a normal person is thrown into fame. It also like flips who the villains are in the story. And then halfway through COVID happens, and then halfway through it's revealed that the most loved character is an awful guy. And these things happen to the filmmakers and that forces a really interesting season of television. Season two of Cheer, I think, is one of the most fascinating, complex, strange pieces of like popular documentary filmmaking I've ever seen. Because of, and it, like, probably because they cynically were like, well, we're going to make a season two.
Yeah.
And I like that. I think that's really interesting.
It worked well in that case. Do you worry it didn't work well?
Great, great. This is a great little, I should have brought it up ages ago. Jersey Shore.
So Jersey Shore, right? I'm surprised a fan. The first four seasons of Jersey Shore is amazing. The first season is amazing because no one had ever seen a show like that before. Mm. It was like this little thumbnail of society that people just weren't exposed to at all, and these fascinating people. And it was so real. Like, you watch the makings of Jersey Shore. The cast of Jersey Shore were literally found at clubs on the Jersey Shore and stuff. They're just like every day. One of them was a vet nurse. One of them was in construction. One was a DJ. Like, they would just, they didn't have any money. They were just these 21-year-olds who liked to party on the Jersey Shore. And the study of them was so incredible. Season two was much the same. And three and four was that kind of introduction to them being kind of famous and like kind of getting really excited by all of a sudden having money and just like whatever. But now they're still making it with the same cast.
What?
They've called it Jersey Shore Family Vacation. These people are all multimillionaires now. They have families and children, mansions, and they're trying to be like, it's still just as insane as season one. And it's like, no, it's not. They're all 40. Like, none of them want to drink like they used to.
No, no, no.
And like, when they all get together, it's like they'll all get together and they sit at the table like, where's Paulie? It's like, Paulie's just like, he's out at the moment. It's like, Paulie just didn't want to do it today and he didn't have to. Paulie didn't have to sit at the table and have a fight with you about, like, you know, what you did when you were drunk last week, because Paulie's a multimillionaire who's just like, not today. I don't want to film today.
It's so
like,
funny.
It's insane. Like, so I'm describing it really badly, but Jersey Shore now is just, this show would not do well were not for the previous season. It's just a very boring
bunch of rich adults stars,
who just have families, and like their lives are literally just kind of like being rich with their families. They're not like fascinating characters anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Anyway,
100%. It's a weird reality. It's when it's reality.
I think
that's what this is tied to, is when it's based on a real thing, whether it's an adaptation or it's like the challenge of that.
Mm.
Like,
I couldn't watch Cheer season two. because I felt so uncomfortable. Because I liked that character so much, that guy.
How much did you watch?
I watched the first episode and then I watched the episode. So I skipped ahead because there was a whole episode dedicated to the bad guy. And the bad guy was my favorite in season one and I just felt so gritty about it. Yeah. I think I could probably watch it now. It was just so immediate when it happened. I was like, oh, because I loved season one. Mm. Again, one of those really interesting, I don't run in those circles.
Well, you're not a...
I don't run in those circles, man. And it was just one of those really interesting looks at a little pocket of society that I just am not... I know nothing about. So interesting.
But it's so funny as well because documentaries like that are so... as close to scripted as can be. Mm. Like, they're so sort of... So what's fascinating about season two is, like, with him, it's just like they made him the lovable guy. They made him that, but they couldn't control the fact that he's a real person and he's a monster.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but no, I would really recommend you watch the whole thing because it's actually genuinely it's a great season of television. And they like,
I should actually.
They bring in the, but it's also very cruel on their part because then they basically become the bad guys, and then you're rooting for the other team, and it's like, it's very interesting.
Well, I will watch it because that is where my brain is at. That's very kind of like, I can handle that. I'll watch Blue Velvet in a month or so.
But it's
but
like,
right now I feel like I could handle Cheer season two.
What I think, right, is interesting is if it was a drama, if season one of Cheer was a drama, and then the writers said, okay, season two, they all become really, really famous. The most liked character is revealed to be a monster. COVID happens in the middle, and we're going to bring in another team, and suddenly the team that you loved is now the bad guys to a new team that we're going to ask you to love. If that was a drama, every executive would be like, that's the fucking wackest shit you've ever pitched ever.
Yeah.
That's cool and it's interesting and it's how more season two should go, but it's like their hand was forced and I love that.
I love that too.
Anyway, should have been talking about Waco.
final thought on Waco. I've actually already said it. It's that I really liked it, but there was just some things that could have happened that would have made me love it more. My other final thought is... I want to give Gia Daddy Ribisi a bit more time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I've really gotten out of this one.
Gia Daddy Ribisi is back. Well, this is the emergence of Gia Daddy Ribisi.
Yeah.
Giovanni Ribisi is back.
I've met Giovanni Ribisi.
Yeah, I knew him well.
Baby, I've been introduced to Gio Daddy, and I want to know more about him.
Giovanni Ribisi is back, and he's got a new name. It's Gia Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching this whole season. As someone who was asked to swallow the pill of John Leguizamo only being in one episode, I think the Shenanza fans out there should have swallowed that same pill.
Yeah, I don't want people to be mad at us because they think we've ruined it. He's in it.
Well,
If you're there, it's just in the opening credits. It's a picture of him. He's a moving picture.
That's a moving picture of him. But I went hard on it this episode, but that was just because that's the mood I'm in. I quite enjoyed it.
Mm.
I thought I got a lot out of it, and there was lots of stuff in it that I thought
I will
was
say
good.
This. Watch the first one first. Watch Waco. I think you could watch Waco the aftermath without seeing the first.
I mean, I can't imagine there'd be many people jumping it. The aftermath.
No, but there might be some people who have listened to this going, oh, I can't be bothered watching Waco, but I'll watch the aftermath. No, watch Waco first.
John Leguizamo's in it heaps more. Tom's got a question.
Got his
what
hand
the
up.
Fuck?
I don't think you'd be so critical of Waco the aftermath if you didn't enjoy it.
Hey,
you
know great point. I mean? Like, great fucking point,
you
Tom.
You wouldn't bother to be critical if you. It was just a whatever.
I love that Tom's here.
This is good.
Yeah, this is good.
This is fresh. No, I think you're absolutely right. I was critical because I was so drawn to certain stories. And then, if it's bad, I'm just like, eh. Yeah. Whereas I was like, No, you're so right. I love that Tom just made a great point and I responded with,
I would just like to say, Tom, thank you for raising your hand. That is how you should conduct yourself
in
here.
Absolutely.
Should we, now that we have Tom here, should we think of some sort of system in which Tom tells us whether he would watch it or not based on what we've said?
Oh, that's fun.
That is fun.
Look at us.
God, I wish I looked hot because we could use all of this.
If only Tom had mentioned it last week.
If only I'd known. I'm going to, based on Leguistamos, the last two episodes gets one. And I think I gave it half last time, but I'm going to give it a full star. One star. One Leguistamo.
I'm going to give it half a Leguistamo. And the reason I'm giving it half a Leguistamo is because I'm shocked and outraged that they were able to find all this bull. Like, now that I know the true story, that they were able to make shit up for Michael Shannon to do. They literally sidelined a woman of color so that Michael Shannon could solve the neo-Nazi crimes. And then they couldn't do the same thing for fucking Johnny Legs. All right. He only gets one scene. Well, why couldn't he have gone off and solved a few crimes? So that's why I give it half a leg with
I love that. And while you were talking then, all I was doing was constructing how we can do this Tom segment. What he's going to say is, after we've done our Leguistamos and we've discussed the thing, you're going to say either Leguizam more, please, or Leguizam no, no.
Okay. And do I give a little bit of context?
Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to.
I think it sounds depressing, dialogue heavy, Leguizam no, no. Thank you.
Okay, no problems.
But General Zod's in it. So.
What can Tom take us away with this week?
Tom, I would love you to take us away with something dark, depressing, and dialogue heavy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Por favor, no llores más, que no puedo contigo. Te quiero. No, tú quieres a José. Por favor, no me dejas, no me dejas. Yo me voy. Espera, espera. Yo te quiero mucho. Me pongas. No.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.